Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, April 27th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
10 Southern African heads of state are expected in Harare beginning today to attend the regional extraordinary summit on industrialization.
The agenda for an extraordinary summit is set by the summit itself. It's normally a one-issue summit, and the issue this time was industrialization.
President Jacob Zuma has angered many Africans for blaming illegal foreigners for the recent xenophobic attacks, saying he should instead address the root cause of the violence.
And the Zimbabwe Electoral Court has reserved judgment in a case in which ZAPU President Tumiso Dabengwa is seeking enforcement of the country's electoral laws.
Justice Bruno, who is one of the electoral court judges, made arguments for both Mr. Dabengwa's lawyers and also from Mr. Kanengone, who represented Rita Makarao, the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
Ten Southern African heads of state are expected in Harare beginning today to attend the regional extraordinary summit on industrialization. But the regional leaders have come under intense criticism for their failure to prioritize xenophobic attacks in South Africa that have caused tension in the SADC region and beyond. The five-day summit under the theme Regional Strategy and Roadmap for Industrialization opened on Saturday, and today SADC region ministers met to begin deliberations. In her remarks, SADC Executive Secretary Dr. Stagomena Lawrence Tex outlined the Regional Strategy and Roadmap for Industrialization as prepared by the ministers of Industry and Commerce in their preparatory meetings. The host and SADC chair, President Robert Mugabe, who was in Indonesia attending the Asia-Africa conference, arrived in the country this morning. Foreign Affairs Permanent Secretary Joy Bima tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the summit is underway.
We had the senior officials meeting on Saturday and Sunday. And so today we had the ministers' meeting, which was discussing the recommendations that have been made by the senior officials for their consideration and eventual recommendation to summit.
When is the summit proper going to take place?
The summit proper is on Wednesday.
Obviously, one of the questions that many people in the southern part of Africa want addressed is the issue of xenophobia. Do you know if it's on the agenda of this summit?
As you know, this is an extraordinary summit. Unlike an ordinary summit where the agenda is set by the secretariat, then considered by the officials and ministers before going to summit, the agenda for an extraordinary summit is set by the summit itself. It's normally a one-issue summit, and the issue this time was industrialization. But then we as senior officials and ministers cannot then dictate the agenda for the extraordinary summit to the heads of state and government. They are going to add it onto the agenda themselves, not us.
Do you know the leaders who will be in attendance?
About 10 of the 14 leaders attending.
There was also an issue about funding. Where did you eventually get the money towards the summit?
There was never that issue. We decided we are going to have the extraordinary summit here, and we were provided the funds by Treasury long back.
That was Foreign Affairs Permanent Secretary Joy Bima speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
But political analyst and Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition regional coordinator Joy Mabenge says the leaders must not skirt the issue of xenophobia.
I don't understand why issues around industrialization, beneficiation, and even discussing the indicative strategy, regional indicative strategy plan, I don't know why issues of that nature would require an extraordinary summit. Be that as it may, the summit is coming, and they are saying that they would want to discuss the issues that are of a developmental nature, infrastructural development and related aspects. But I would imagine that given the serious nature of the political crisis that we seem to be seeing in the region, it would have made a little more sense for them to also incorporate an agenda that deals with the deteriorating human rights and governance situation as signified by what has been happening in South Africa, the xenophobic attacks.
But in deploying the army, for example, in the so-called hotspots, is South Africa not addressing this issue? And could this be the reason why SADC has decided to probably shelve it for now?
So in as much as South Africa is dealing with the matter because it is happening within their territory, it is important for this issue to be classified as a SADC and as an African challenge and problem, and these leaders get open and they tackle the bull by its horns. It's important to have a multi-pronged approach to dealing with this case.
That was political analyst and crisis in Zimbabwe regional coordinator Joy Mabenge speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Meanwhile, in a press statement, the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions has described the summit as, quote, nothing but hot air and a waste of taxpayers' money. The Labour Party said resolutions will not be implemented and Harare should have used the money to address its growing economic problems. The ZCTU said the leaders should have used the platform to address xenophobia. It also charged that President Robert Mugabe, as SADC chairman, should account for abducted human rights activist Itai Dzamara.
South African President Jacob Zuma today angered many within the African diaspora when he told the nation in his Independence Day speech that Mozambican national Emmanuel Stole, killed in a xenophobic attack in Alexandra recently, was an illegal immigrant. Mr. Zuma said Stole's real name was Manuel Josias, adding he was in fact killed during a Carlos robbery in Alexandra Township. This has angered men who see President Zuma's government as trying to belittle the killings of foreign nationals and not paying attention to the attacks on foreigners and ensuring justice is delivered for the victims. Although he condemned what he said were attacks on foreigners, Mr. Zuma in his speech went on to say, quote, reports indicate that he used a false name to avoid detection by authorities as he was an illegal immigrant, of court. African governments have reacted angrily to attacks, with Nigeria giving South Africa grief over the issue. Former President Olusegun Obasanjo today said if he was Mr. Zuma, he would have handled the xenophobic attacks differently, including castigating those close to him, making comments glorifying the attacks and bringing to book perpetrators of the xenophobic violence.
Meanwhile, police in Johannesburg, South Africa today launched an operation aimed at flushing out armed criminals and in the process arrested dozens of illegal immigrants, including Zimbabweans, in the highly populated sections of Hillbrow and Beria. The raid was done today on the day to mark South Africa's 20th Independence Day. We spoke to Chairman Ngabuto Nicholas Dube of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, who says Zimbabweans are now living in fear because of the raids.
We were told in the morning at around 9 a.m. that the police and the military, the army, invaded the Hillbrow with the pretext, as we understand it, searching for firearms, drugs, and other illegal substance that might be in the hands of the people that live in Hillbrow. We saw in the last few days that they'd gone to do the same operation in the hostels, which are normally occupied by the Zulu people. But this operation today, it resulted in the arrest of those that are not legal in the country, or in a proper way, the illegal immigrants. Amongst those that were arrested are Zimbabwe nationals who don't have proper documents, who are told that they are now at the Hillbrow police station. We tried earlier on to make efforts to speak to the head of the police at Hillbrow. We were not successful and we'll be making a follow-up tomorrow.
That was Ngabuto Nicholas Dube of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa. He was speaking to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg. Meanwhile, gospel musician Silence Shasha has released a new song, When Will This End?, against xenophobic attacks in South Africa that have seen at least 7 people lose their lives. Shasha speaks with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira about the song.
This news, I didn't receive it well, and then I converted what I was feeling by that time into a song. That's why I came up with the song. Taking into account what's happening in South Africa and what happened in Kenya, you know, the Garissa attack where children at a university were killed, you know, it was quite sad. So as an artist, it was a way of trying to give a message to Africa so that we can be in love with one another and we can have better ways of solving issues than violence.
We understand that SADC leaders are meeting in Harare this week. What message would you have for the leaders in the region to deal with such issues as xenophobia in South Africa?
What I would want to say to them is that there are better ways of solving issues. Let us not use hate speech. Let us not use violence. Let us not insult each other. We are all Africans. We belong to Africa. We've got the same blood in our veins. If you listen to the song, it's only talking about love. We do not need to go that far. Personally, I don't think there was a reason or there is a reason to kill someone or to attack someone only by the mere fact that they are foreigners. So the song is also a plea to God, where I was asking for the mercy of God to intervene, because for now, the only person who can take out violence from someone's mind probably is God. As human beings, we might go in paper, but the final answer we can have is to look up to God. But as human beings, let's do our part. Let's just love each other. Let's solve issues immediately. God of mercy, almighty God, your mercy. God of mercy, almighty God, we need your hand of mercy.
And that was gospel musician Silence Shasha on the line from Harare with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Court has reserved judgment in a case in which ZAPU President Dumiso Dabengwa is seeking enforcement of the country's electoral laws. Judge Justice Chinembiri Bunu did not give reasons for his decision to reserve judgment on constitutional provisions relating to the role of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission and Registrar General's Office in running the country's polls. Dabengwa wants the old laws to be aligned with the country's new constitution following moves by ZEC to take over the country's controversial voters' role. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesman Kumbirai Mafunda speaks to Studio 7 about this issue.
Justice Bruno, who is one of the electoral court judges, made arguments for both Mr. Dabengwa's lawyers and also from Mr. Kanengoni, who represented Rita Makarau, the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. And after hearing arguments from the two parties, the judge reserved the judgment. I think it's an important case if we consider that in a couple of weeks or in less than 2-3 months, there will be by-elections that will be held in almost more than 10 constituencies in Zimbabwe. So I thought that is a crucial and a critical case which should have been treated with urgency. But we just hope that Justice Bruno will soon deliver handover his judgment, considering that elections will be held soon.
We understand that ZEC has already announced that it has taken over from the Registrar General's office.
I think the worrying thing is the treatment by ZEC that they are doing, that today they just wake up and say, okay, today we are announcing that the voters will be registered in Mount Gowing, and not just doing a fresh setup of the whole voters roll issue, which has been contentious in Zimbabwe. So it's the attitude by ZEC which is of concern here.
That was Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesman Kumbirai Mafunda speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
The 56th edition of the Zimbabwe International Trade Fair starts in Bulawayo tomorrow with the first 3 days earmarked for business days, followed by the official opening ceremony on Friday. Members of the public will be allowed to access the ZITF showgrounds between Thursday and Saturday. Some of the events lined up at the show include the annual ZITF Business Conference, Tourism Expo, Printing and Packaging Exhibition, Education Expo, Home Improvement Exhibition, the Bulawayo Agricultural Show, and ZITF Charity Golf Challenge. The theme of the show is Stimulating Trade, Seizing Opportunities to Accelerate Growth. Hundreds of local companies and several countries are participating at the annual event.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
the fistula operations start in Zimbabwe.
And the Zimbabwe Premier Soccer League race continues. Stay tuned for more details.
But first, regional and international news.
A police in Burundi have clashed for a second day with protesters demonstrating against President Pierre Nkurunziza and his controversial decision to run for a third term. Witnesses said police used tear gas, water cannon, and live ammunition to disperse hundreds of protesters Monday in the capital, Bujumbura.
Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir has won another term in office with 94% of the vote in an election boycotted by the opposition.
People in Togo continued waiting Monday for the results of an election that is expected to keep President Faure Gnassingbé in power.
International rescue and relief teams are converging on Nepal's capital, Kathmandu, 2 days after a massive earthquake killed more than 3,700 people and injured several thousand others.
The United States and Japan plan to expand their military cooperation under new guidelines that, for the first time in the history of the alliance, will allow Tokyo to project its power on a global scale.
In a last-ditch effort to save two drug traffickers from the firing squad in Indonesia, Australia's foreign ministry urged Jakarta today to delay the executions until allegations of corruption in their trial could be investigated.
And Loretta Lynch has been sworn in as the United States' new Attorney General. Vice President Joe Biden led the ceremony at the Justice Department to make Lynch the nation's top law enforcement official.
The Women and Health Alliance International, the University of Zimbabwe and Harare Hospital today launched their fourth fistula operation campaign in Harare, seeking to assist women living with a curable condition. The campaign is seeking to provide surgeries to several women this week, remains open for more cases that need urgent attention. An obstetric fistula is a serious internal organ injury sustained during childbirth, leaving women with urinary and other internal scars. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to National Coordinator for the Outreach Program with Women and Health Alliance International, Priscilla Mabende, who talks about this week's event.
The surgery has begun today. 3 women have undergone surgery, and we have 18 more awaiting surgery. However, the program is still open to receive new patients, so we strongly encourage anybody suffering from this condition or anybody you know who suffers from this condition to get in touch with us, and we put you on the waiting list for the operation.
You just described some of the symptoms of obstetric fistula. Can you tell our listeners what types of women are there now to receive surgeries?
The main two profiles we have of the women, there is the older woman who has had a child but who's been in labor for a prolonged time, usually one day and beyond, and the labor has happened at home. By the time they get to hospital, 2 or 3 days later, it's a stillborn baby who is delivered either by cesarean or who is delivered through the actual assisted normal delivery. The other one is the young girl aged between 13 and 15 who falls pregnant and also delivers at home, or goes to a clinic or health facility late to have the delivery assisted.
And can you again describe what some of the symptoms of having a fistula are?
When you have a vaginal fistula, a vesico vaginal, it means that you are incontinent of urine. The urine continuously comes out. So we are not talking about those women who have bladder control issues, who can hold their urine and then it comes out if they go to the toilet late. No, we are referring to those women who have a continuous, non-stop flow of urine and is coming out from the vaginal passage, not from the urethra. The same thing with the rectovaginal fistula. The women themselves, they have a continuous stream of feces coming out from the vaginal passage. So it is not coming out from the usual passage, which is the anus. It's coming out from the vaginal passage.
Can you let our listeners know how they can get in touch with the organization if they are or family members are interested in this week seeking assistance or surgery for their obstetric fistula?
So our numbers that you can get hold of us, we have a WhatsApp number, which is 0782-640-840. I'll repeat the WhatsApp number. 0782-640-840. The other number on which you can send a call me back, a text or a message, or just give a missed call, 0779-626-506. I'll repeat the number, 0779-626-506.
And we understand that you are encouraging all women throughout Zimbabwe to seek assistance. How will you help them reach to Harare if they are unable to do so?
The procedure, you contact us or you encourage a person you know who is suffering from this condition to contact us. We will sit with them and verify whether or not it is a VVF or an RRVF, which is the fistula type. And if it is, we will pay for them to come through to Harare. So we do not encourage anybody to travel without speaking with us first so that we can assist them to travel. We also do not encourage anyone to borrow money to travel. So we really want to give the comprehensive care. Call us or text on those numbers. We will get in touch with you. We will send you money to travel when you have a date for surgery. We pay for your entire hospital stay, including your surgery costs. All you have to do is to come forward and let us know that you need help, and we will help you.
That was Priscilla Mabende, National Coordinator for the Fistula Outreach Program with Women and Health Alliance International, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The March 29th Uzbek presidential election was less than free and fair, according to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, observer mission. Longtime authoritarian leader Islam Karimov won a fourth consecutive term, garnering over 90% of the vote against three nominal rivals. According to Uzbekistan's Election Commission, there was 91% voter turnout. The OSCE observer mission reported that the elections not only contravened the constitutional limit of two consecutive presidential terms, but were further marked by lack of genuine political alternatives, restrictions on freedoms of expression and association, and widespread legal and organizational shortcomings. The 77-year-old Karimov has led the former Soviet Republic in Central Asia since the late 1980s and has sought to neutralize all opposition to his rule. In 2005, the Uzbek government conducted a violent crackdown on demonstrators in the Fergana Valley city of Andijan that is believed to have left more than 100 dead. Almost all Western media have been barred from reporting inside the country since that time, and independent Uzbek journalists and activists face sustained harassment. The United States continues to firmly support the rights of all Uzbeks to take part in free, fair, and periodic elections marked by meaningful choice. As such, said U.S. Ambassador to the U.S. Mission to the OSCE, Daniel Baer, "We remain committed to pursuing democratic reforms and the protection of human rights in Uzbekistan, in support of economic development and regional stability. In the spirit of partnership with Uzbekistan, the U.S. encourages the government to respond to the OSCE report and to fulfill its international obligations and OSCE commitments on democratic elections and civil and political rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In our sports segment, the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League race continues with the top spot still too hot to handle. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us how.
First, it was Triangle, then Dynamos took over before Triangle regained the lead. But now, it is Chicken Inn. The Blower side, who are commonly known here as the Gamecocks, are at the top of the table with 15 points after their hard-fought 1-0 win over neighbors Haumine. Chicken Inn coach Joey Antipas is boasting that this is their year.
So far so good. I picked up a lot of positives from the boys, and I believe if they can continue this way, then it could be a major threat in the league.
Chicken Inn have overtaken Triangle, who were surprisingly beaten 1-0 by Nesbet Sarucera's newly promoted Flame Lily. More important was the fact that this was the Prisons Wonders' first ever win since their promotion into the Premiership at the beginning of the season. But Dynamos remained the only unbeaten side after picking up a valuable away point at Harare City. The Sunshine City boys dominated the game but could not break the solid Dynamos defense. Harare City coach Taurai Mangwiro thinks his team deserved to win the match.
The strong feeling we let them off the hook. In terms of clear opportunities, I thought we had more clear opportunities than our opponents.
The former Capes United coach is crying for the lost valuable 2 points.
I would want to look at it as we dropped 2 points today. We should have gotten all three.
Financially crippled Capes United could only manage a 1-0 draw against ZPC Kariba at the National Sports Stadium, but coach Mark Harrison thinks they should have won the game.
I mean, we've created so many goal chances. I mean, I say goal chances, not half chances. I mean, we should have won the game by 5, I think.
While Antipas and Mangwiro are talking of the championship, pressure continues to pile on FC Platinum coach Norman Mapeza after his youthful side started to another defeat, this time at the hands of Wawa Prisons. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
It's time now to go to our mailbag, where we have this letter from Tamani Ncube, who is writing from Madlambuzi Plumtree, and he says, "Hi Ntunga and the whole team for a splendid job. If we could think of others before ourselves, this world could be a better place. Zimbabwe has been destroyed by a heartless regime. On Saturday the 18th, they must celebrate independence, not anything else, because we depend on other nations for almost everything." And he adds, "Keep up the good work."
Another writer says, "Hi Jonga, blessing and everyone at Studio 7. Keep it up, guys. You are doing the right thing for us. Keep informing. FM, it's F. Makwaya in Bulawayo."
And the last one is from an anonymous listener who says, "Dr. T," oh, that's his name. He says, "Dr. T says, keep on doing the good job, guys. Thanks, Dr. T."
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about the forthcoming SADC extraordinary meeting, which will focus on industrialization as xenophobia fears grip South Africa.
Now to recap today's top stories.
10 Southern African heads of state are expected in Harare beginning today to attend the regional extraordinary summit on industrialization.
President Jacob Zuma has angered many Africans for blaming illegal foreigners for the recent xenophobic attacks, saying he should instead address the root cause of the violence.
Now that's our broadcast. Stay tuned for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.